From WGCU, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. City and county governments won't be able to write new regulations on businesses, professions, and occupations, and state law would preempt any existing local laws and regulations. That's the heart of House Bill 17, now advancing in Tallahassee. We'll talk with a lawmaker behind the bill and with the local Chamber of Commerce about how this might impact communities throughout the state. Plus, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Festival is celebrating the legacy of the famed River of Grass author, 70 years after her pivotal book about the Everglades was first published. Coming up, we'll talk with the festival organizers at the Museum of the Everglades in Everglades City, and we'll hear from the Friends of the Everglades working to keep Douglas's environmental work and legacy alive today. But first, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. It's a name that is likely familiar to many living in South Florida. The author, journalist, and environmental writer is perhaps best known for her 1947 book, Everglades, River of Grass. But next week, at the 13th annual Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Festival in Everglades City, her legacy in Florida is being celebrated 70 years after her seminal work was published. Here to talk about the festival is Museum of the Everglades manager Thomas Lockyer. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Also joining the program is Connie Washburn with the Friends of the Everglades, the advocacy group that Douglas herself began, which is still pursuing environmental projects as well as preserving Douglas's legacy. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We are talking about Marjorie Stoneman Douglas and the upcoming 13th Annual Festival in her name. Call in with your thoughts or questions at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So Thomas Lockyer with the Museum of the Everglades, how did this festival honoring Marjorie Stoneman Douglas get started?
Well, it's a little before my time, obviously, 13 years ago. I have been with the museum all of 5 weeks at this point.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Well, welcome to it.
Well, thank you. And it's an exciting time to get involved. As I understand it, it was started by one of our previous managers, Virginia Salmon, and she was excited about the idea of celebrating this legacy, but also bringing people in to experience different aspects of it. I mean, our festival celebrates all aspects of the Everglades, everything from the history to the science, the flora, the fauna, and we offer not only a variety of talks and seminars, but also excursions that so people can get out and walk in the swamp, kayak, and just really get knee deep, literally, in the Everglades.
Mm-hmm. Well, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas lived much of her life in Miami, so why is the celebration of her legacy happening in Everglades City?
Well, yeah, if you look at the geography of Everglades National Park, it comes right up to Everglades City to a point where we can probably hit it with a rock from our museum. The national park and the ecosystem as a whole spans the entire South Florida area. And I think that a lot of people forget that while you can drive into the park from the Miami side, we get a tremendous amount. We get thousands and thousands of visitors from around the world that are visiting the Everglades from the other side as well. And while most of our excursions and the adventures that people engage in are water-based or at least very least swamp-based, this ecosystem, this park that a lot of people would say encompasses well beyond the national park into Fakahatchee Strand or Big Cypress, all these sorts of things. This is all part of the same ecosystem. So it makes sense for us to celebrate not just the Everglades, but its history from where we are in the city. And I think as far as Marjorie Stoneman Douglas goes, the dedication of the park took place right there in Everglades City, and she was present for that.
Yeah, and being the namesake city, it kind of makes sense.
Absolutely.
You know, since that was kind of her thing. Connie Washburn with Friends of the Everglades, can you tell me a little bit more about the woman who came to write The River of Grass? How did she get her start?
Marjorie was an incredible woman and a very feisty woman. She moved to South Florida from 25. She was born in 1890 and 1998 at 108 years old. And I spoke with her shortly before she passed, and she was sharp as a tack. She moved down here and she knew nothing about South Florida and the Everglades. And she loved it. And she started working for her father at what is now the Miami Herald. And she was at first a society reporter and then became in her own renown. She wrote short stories and so forth. And the person came to her and said, Marjorie, I want you to write a book about a river. And she said, well, I don't know anything about rivers. And she said, but I do know something about the Everglades. And I'd like to learn more about that and write about it. And that is actually how the Everglades got their very special name of River of Grass. So she wrote about it, and she wrote the book that begins, There Are No Other Everglades in the World. They are, they always have been, unique regions, remote, wholly known. Nothing anywhere else is like them. And that is the truth. After she wrote her book and became a strong advocate of protecting the Everglades, there was a proposal to build Jetport in what's now the Big Cypress area.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very opposed to that, but she said, I'm just one woman, what can I do? And a person.
We're kind of having a hard time, Connie, with your connection, and I'm missing a little bit of what you're saying. I'll see if we can try to reestablish that connection a little bit better on a line that's kind of not dropping out on us. So I'm going to have you hold for just a second, and we'll get back to talking about the event that's going to be happening this weekend with Thomas Lockyer. Thomas, tell me a little bit about what we can expect coming up this weekend.
Well, we have a variety of talks, and they really run the entire gamut. You've got authors, you've got artists and photographers, you've got historians, museum professionals, you've got scientists ranging from research geologists to environmental biologists, and you know, talking about different aspects of the Everglades. I mean, some people I think that might have an environmental agenda. Other people are just really celebrating the history. And, you know, we have somebody who's giving a talk on one of the first wardens back before Everglades National Park, back when it was Royal Palm State Park, before it was even designated.
So what would a warden have done?
The Everglades has a great history with the wardens. And even before we had the government wardens, you had the Audubon wardens that were preventing people from poaching the endangered species. Plume hunting was a huge business in the Everglades.
So it's kind of like the Wild Wild South.
It really, really was. You had single wardens for thousands of miles, and so that they would know what was going on where, but you even had some that were martyred and murdered over those times. So it's a history that like I said, it's very colorful.
You're going to have something for the art lover, you're going to have something for the history buff, the environmentalist, and then just people that just want to get together and just love being there.
Absolutely. I mean, the last day of the festival on Saturday, we have the Art in the Glades arts and crafts show that'll be going on outside the museum at the same time. So there is definitely something for everybody.
And it sounds like we have Connie Washburn back. Sorry, we had to reestablish our connection, but I wanted to get back to this book. 1947 is when it came out, River of Grass. How was that book received?
It was received very well, and it is really what made the difference, in my opinion, what made the difference for the Everglades, because up until that time, the Florida Everglades was really thought of as a swamp that should be drained and diked and developed into places for people to live and do business. And the uniqueness of it and the fact of over 3,000 species and the biological diversity of it was not known. And now we know that the Everglades is the source of fresh drinking water for 8 million people in South Florida, which makes it even more important.
So anyone who's ever been to the Everglades or in the wilds of South Florida knows it's a hot, wet, buggy place. Did Marjorie Stoneman Douglas spend a lot of time out there, and what did she like about it?
She did spend a lot of time out there, and Marjorie's philosophy was to live simply and to live every day. And she thought that, for example, her house in Coconut Grove, which she built, which she designed and had built in 1927, had no air conditioning, no washer, no dryer, that type of thing. And she lived very simply. I've been in that house, and I've been with her. And it's a very simple place, and that's the way she lived her life.
Is that house still there? I'm sorry.
The house is still there. Yes, the house is still there. And it is in the process of having a land trust group and many other people who care about Marjorie's legacy working on renovation and some possibilities of hopefully having it open to the public sometime in the future.
So 1947 was a big year for the Everglades. It was also the year that it became a national park. What was that like for her?
Well, she was actually one of the original promoters to make the Everglades a national park. And, of course, the greater Everglades is much bigger than the three national parks within the Everglades. And, on the other hand, the Everglades itself is one half the size it was before all the development started happening with the Everglades.
Next week is the 13th annual Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Festival in Everglades City, and we are talking with the event organizers about the festival and the legacy of the author of The River of Grass. You can share your thoughts with us at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Thomas Lockyer, I want to get back with you about
sure.
the Museum of the Everglades, and one of the talks at the festival is about facts and myths about fracking. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, honestly, at the museum, we leave the science to the scientists.
Sure.
And
it's always a good idea.
Yeah. And so for us, like I said, that's one of those things. The gentleman giving that is a research geologist, and as far as what stance he's going to take, I really don't know. What he's there to do is to really inform the public about from a scientific standpoint. And that's one of the things that we try and do at the museum. Is it's not about, you know, taking this side or that side or moralizing on history or anything like that. That we present the facts for people,
and I think creating a dialogue.
Exactly, and that's one of the things that we hope to do with the festival. It's some people would look at us and say, well, why don't you just celebrate the birds and the flowers? And you know, frankly, people want to get a little bit more, and we do want a dialogue, and we do want to just to really push forth the cultural heritage of the area, which spans a lot of different things. I mean, you know, we mentioned the plume hunting. I mean, that's a history in Everglades City. That was a big business. There are a lot of things that have been big business traditionally in the Everglades that at this point now just don't exist anymore. But it doesn't mean that we don't have exhibits about them or give presentations
about
them.
Yeah, plumes are no longer fashionable.
No, they aren't.
But although alligator, I guess, maybe.
It goes back and forth, I think. It depends on what show's popular in the History Channel, probably.
The ebb and flow of fashion and alligators.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about...
If I can pop in a little bit about the science and so forth of the Everglades. That is something that Friends of the Everglades, the group that Marjorie established in 1970, a nonprofit, and our mission is to preserve, protect, and restore the only Everglades in the world, has worked for 48 years now to study the science. We refer to and have scientists on our board, and we We go to bat for the Everglades whenever we're needed. We are a totally nonprofit group, and we are trying to fulfill our mission. And in my way of thinking, this is the time for people to get involved with grassroots groups that want to protect something that people feel strongly about. And if I can put in a little plug for our organization, our website is everglades.org, and we have a lot of good information about the challenges faced by the Everglades today and a lot of ways that people can sign petitions and promote the things that they would like to support on behalf of the Everglades.
And we'll have a link to your website on WGCUnews.org in case people didn't catch that particular address. But I wanted to also talk about the multi-billion-dollar restoration efforts that are underway to try to repair issues with the Everglades, with Lake Okeechobee, and trying to get water to get back down there. With things drying out, what do you think about the current restoration efforts that are being lobbed out there as ideas?
Well, right now on the forefront, a very timely issue is Senate Bill 10, proposed by Joe Negron. Actually, he did not propose the bill. I mean, it's his idea. And it is in discussion right now and will be voted on.
That's the one
in
proposing,
May, I believe.
And that's proposing to purchase 60,000 acres of land for easing some of the water burden from Lake Okeechobee.
Right. And the true purpose of that is to collect water and it before it is sent south into the through the Everglades, which is where it needs to be sent, not to the east and west coast, to send that dirty water straight from Lake Okeechobee to both the Gulf and the Atlantic and the rivers along the way. And we all saw last year what happened in the Stewart area with the algae soup bloom there. And that could happen again anytime, just according to rain and weather conditions.
And it seemed to it really got a lot of people's attention that are not directly in the Everglades, or you know, it got attention on both coasts. And it seems like that's kind of resulted in a concerted effort. However, this is still part of the 17-year-old SERP program. So I'm wondering, what did Marjorie think about the building of I-75? Or the Tamiami Trail, roads that cut right through her Everglades?
Well, I'm sure she didn't know about I-75, or I doubt it. But she wanted to protect Everglades in any way she could. Now, I know that she did. In fact, there is a story of how often she and her friends would go out onto the Tamiami Trail and have picnics nearby, but it was a much different place that day. Marjorie had no problem going to Tallahassee and speaking before the legislature. If anybody wants to read more about this fascinating woman, there is an autobiography called Voice of the Everglades, and she tells about going up to Tallahassee and having the representatives spit into the spittoons as she was speaking to them about cleaning the Everglades. So these are not new problems that we're having, but we continue to work toward a preservation and a protection of the Everglades.
We recently did a show with environmental writer Terry Tempest Williams, and she's written a lot about the American West and the Utah desert. She was speaking at a lecture named in honor of Rachel Carson, who is an influential book written in 1962 called Silent Spring. What do you think it is about these women and their work that has had such a huge impact on environmental issues?
Well, women are nurturers, natural nurturers, and I think That is how these women, Jane Goodall, Rachel Carson, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, they saw something that needed their help. And then in all three cases, they wrote about it and worked toward that effort. And perhaps that is why women like these and like Marjorie spent their entire adult life passionately working toward preserving a place that we can't get back. After it has been ruined, we cannot get it back. And there are so many saltwater intrusions, global climate change, rise. The Everglades is facing so many problems today, and some of them could be fairly easily corrected. And so that is why the people who care about the Everglades need to speak up and let their representatives know that this is what we want. We want to protect the Everglades and make it right.
And Thomas Lockyer, tell me about how you feel hearing all these stories and about this magnificent woman who your festival is celebrating.
Well, I think that, as an historian, a museum professional, this is exactly why we're here. It's exactly why we do these things. You know, Connie is going to be the keynote speaker at our opening ceremony on Tuesday, and I'm excited to meet her in person, hear some more of her stories and experiences. But this is exactly what we want to do. As museum professionals, we're here to educate and inspire. And this is exactly what I hear going on.
Yeah, I kind of get a little starstruck hearing about everything that she did.
Absolutely.
Watching guys spitting in spittoons while she's trying to make an impassioned presentation. Just, you know, it's like, wow, way to stand up.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yes.
So it's kind of an interest. Sorry?
She was very feisty. She basically said, I will go any place and talk to anybody about the Everglades. If there is one or more people in a room, I will talk to them. And she went to PTA meetings, and she went to Audubon and Sierra Club meetings. And she spoke with her floppy hat on her head. And I was just at the Everglades Coalition earlier in January, and I spoke to Governor Graham.
Well, it sounds like you are definitely following her lead, and you will be speaking this weekend at the with the Friends of the Everglades at the festival honoring her. So we're going to have to leave it there today. We ran out of time, but I want to thank you for being on the phone with us, Connie Washburn, and also Thomas Lockyer with the Museum of the Everglades. I want to tell you thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Going to be an exciting time. And for more information about it, you can check our website at wgcunews.org. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith and directed by Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.